Welcome to the Nakui Native Healthcast. The National Council of Urban Indian Health's podcast is your go-to source for insightful discussions on diverse topics impacting urban Indigenous communities across the nation. From health and wellness to cultural preservation, policy insights, and community empowerment, join us as we delve into the rich tapestry of issues that shape the lives of urban Indigenous individuals and families. Our podcast brings together experts, community leaders, and advocates to explore innovative solutions, share inspiring stories, and foster a deeper understanding of the unique challenges and triumphs within urban Native populations. Tune in as we celebrate resilience, amplify voices, and engage in meaningful conversations aimed at creating a brighter, healthier future for urban Indian communities everywhere.
Hello, my name is Meredith Ramondi. I'm the Vice President of Policy and Communications at the National Council of Urban Indian Health. I'm joined today by Chandice Colleen, who is the Director of Federal Relations at the National Council of Urban Indian Health. Hi, Chandice. How are you?
Good. Good to be here talking about appropriations for urban Indian organizations.
Awesome. Well, it's great to have you, and we're excited to hear more about advance appropriations, urban Indian organizations, and what all this means. So can you just start by telling me a little bit about what urban Indian organizations are?
Yeah, urban Indian organizations are Native-controlled nonprofit organizations who contract with the Indian Health Service to provide health care as well as other social services to American Indians and Alaska Natives in urban areas. They have a very long history. They're very, very much born out of the federal policy of relocation in the 1950s, when the federal government was in the business of trying to relocate American Indians and Alaska Natives from more rural reservations to urban areas. And when Native people got to the urban areas that they were being relocated to, they found that a lot of the services the federal government had promised to provide them were not there. And the federal government wasn't living up to its promise to provide those services. So community leaders among the Native community in those urban areas, with the support of tribal leaders, founded urban Indian organizations in the 1950s. And they, like I said, provide a whole range of services, including healthcare services. And in 1976, with the passage of the Indian Health Care Improvement Act in Congress, UIOs were incorporated formally into the Indian health care system, which now is comprised of three branches. There's the Indian Health Service, which is a federally run series of healthcare facilities. There is the tribal system, which are tribally run healthcare facilities. And there are urban Indian organizations, which, as I mentioned, are Native-run nonprofits, which contract directly with the Indian Health Service.
Great. That's a really helpful overview. Can you explain a little bit about the trust responsibility and how it relates to this population?
The United States has a trust responsibility, trust obligation to American Indians and Alaska Natives. And that trust obligation covers a wide range of activities and duties that the United States owes to American Indians and Alaska Natives. For purposes of our discussion, we're talking about healthcare services, but I think it's important to understand that that trust obligation requires the United States to undertake a wide range of activities for tribal governments and American Indians and Alaska Natives. So with respect to healthcare services, if anybody's interested in doing a little light legislative reading, I encourage you to go read the Indian Health Care Improvement Act, 25 U.S.C. 1601, has the statement of a really good summary statement of the United States' trust obligation to provide health care services to American Indians and Alaska Natives, as well as a statement of national policy of how the United States is going to fulfill that trust obligation. But essentially, the United States, in return for the land ceded by tribes to create what is now the United States, has promised to provide healthcare services to American Indians and Alaska Natives. Now, not every Native person lives on a reservation where they might have access to facilities run by the Indian Health Service or tribal governments. A number of Native people live in urban areas. And so urban Indian organizations are the primary way that the federal government fulfills its trust responsibility in urban areas. The IHS contracts with 41 urban Indian organizations who run healthcare facilities in 38 urban areas across the country, providing healthcare services as well as social services to American Indians and Alaska Natives.
Wonderful. Well, thank you for providing that additional context. It's really helpful to see how we ended up where we are with regards to the Indian health system that we see today. So one thing I wanted to learn more about is how the funding for those programs works. Does Congress appropriate money? Is it a permanent thing that happened in 1976? Or what kind of has been the path for funding these programs on a federal level?
Every year, Congress is part of the budget that it hopefully passes, though we are currently here at the beginning of 2024, slightly outside the normal appropriations process with a couple of ongoing continuing resolutions. But every year, ideally, Congress passes a budget and a series of appropriations bills that provide funding for the entire federal government, including the Indian Health Service. Within the budget for the Indian Health Service, there's an urban health line item, which funds all of the contracts that the IHS signs with the 41 urban Indian organizations across the country. So that is, it's normally an annual process through which Congress appropriates that money. I think, you know, something that's often left out of this conversation is that the process is in many ways sort of bifurcated. There's also an administrative process. The president every year also formulates a budget, which is submitted to Congress to start the appropriations process. So there's the congressional appropriations process by which Congress actually allocates the funding for the various agencies of the federal government. There's also an administrative portion of the process by which the president recommends a set amount of funding for each agency as well.
Okay. And so given the current climate in Congress, how has that been working for facilities with the continuing resolutions, and how are they able to get their needs met based on the way the system has been working?
We're very fortunate that in the last, let's say, 2 years, not sure I remember, we'll be out of bridge. We are very fortunate that the IHS is currently funded under an advanced appropriation. And that's critical because historically, the IHS has relied on the annual appropriations process, which means that every time there's a shutdown, every time that there is a delay in the budget, the healthcare services which are provided to American Indians and Alaska Natives are impacted because they're directly reliant on the budget of the federal government. And it is literally a matter of life and death, because you're talking about critically needed healthcare services that are reliant upon the federal budget being passed in a timely manner. So anytime there's a budget dispute, it's delayed, the budget's cut, there's a government shutdown, like I mentioned, that then impacts the funding which is available for the entire Indian healthcare system, including urban Indian organizations. In the past, we've seen very drastic impacts, especially during government shutdowns. We've had UIOs who had to significantly decrease their operations or in some cases even close their doors. And that's led to deaths among their patient population and their community. So the ability of Congress to actually fund the government in a timely manner for American Indians and Alaska Natives is, like I said, literally a matter of life and death.
And so, you know, Congress must pretty much generally regularly pass budgets. So this probably isn't a problem that often, or can you speak to that?
It's a huge problem. I don't remember the exact statistic off the top of my head, but with great frequency, Congress fails to pass a budget on time. And we have become increasingly reliant in recent years on continuing resolutions, which are a funding mechanism that Congress has to rely upon when it can't pass a budget on time. There's a number of sort of intricate aspects to resolutions, the most significant of which for our purposes today is the fact that it makes it incredibly difficult for UIOs as well as IHS and tribal facilities to plan ahead, to plan the services that they're going to be able to provide, to plan their operating hours, to help patients make appointments, for example, because they don't know when their funding is going to run out. Generally, continuing resolutions, CRs, you'll often hear them referred to, they're very short in nature. They fund the government for just a couple months at a time, which means that long-term planning, even just yearly planning, becomes almost impossible when you don't know when your funding is actually going to hit your bank accounts, hit your books, so that you can take care of planning services for the next year. Like I said, we've become increasingly reliant on those in recent years. Congress has really struggled to pass its budget on time, and that's really had a negative impact on UIOs as well as the other branches of the Indian healthcare system.
And okay, so, but doesn't Congress protect all healthcare programs and ensure that they don't fall through the cracks like this?
There are certain other healthcare services which are funded by the federal government, which receive protections that historically have not been available to the Indian healthcare system. So, for example, Medicaid is funded under what's called a mandatory appropriation, so it is not subject to the same budgetary uncertainties around continuing resolutions or federal government shutdowns. Similarly, Veterans Health Administration has received advanced appropriations in the past, which has given it a significantly improved ability to engage in long-term planning and provide improved healthcare services to veterans. That has not been the case for the IHS. The IHS has been the only healthcare service provider funded by the federal government, which has not received mandatory appropriations or advanced appropriations up until this past fiscal year.
Thanks for providing that clarification. That's really helpful. So you said that there's currently an advanced appropriation. Is that going to continue, or what's the status of that? And what kind of support is needed to continue to ensure that this continuity of care is able to be sustained?
Yeah, across the board, there is broad agreement that this is something that needs to continue for the Indian healthcare system, that ITU system we've been discussing. All the feedback we've gotten from our partners at the various urban Indian organizations we work with have expressed how critically important the advance appropriation this past fiscal year has been. It allowed them to engage in long-term planning when there was a budget dispute, and we weren't sure if the federal government was going to shut down at the end of last year. UIOs knew that they would be able to continue operations because of the advance appropriations that the IHS received, because that urban health line item within the IHS budget is what provides them with a significant amount of their funding. So that they knew that they could continue to plan their operations, continue to take care of their patients, continue to provide those critically needed services to American Indians and Alaska Natives, no matter what the budget situation in Washington was. Across the board, everyone agrees that we need to continue to provide advance appropriations for the Indian Health Service so that those providers, whether they're at UIOs, at tribal facilities, at IHS facilities, can continue to engage in that sort of long-term planning to provide those services to their patients. Without it, you have to worry, are our doors going to be open on November 1st, right? Or if there's a CR for 2 months, okay, we can only do 2 months worth of planning until this one expires. And then we hope Congress passes a budget. So it's something that's critically needed. It's something that we need all of our partners to support, not just those who are at UIOs, at tribes, those partners who are engaged in the healthcare space broadly across the country. I think we are all aware that this is a best practice in terms of providing services to American Indians and Alaska Natives. We need that support to continue on Capitol Hill to make sure that they continue to include this in the federal government's budget.
So when you say include it in the federal government's budget, does that mean it's up to both Congress and the federal government to continue the advance appropriation going forward?
Yeah, good call back to the sort of bifurcated process that I referred to earlier. So it's something that we want to see that the president continues to include in the president's budget that's submitted every year to Congress to make sure that that request for advance appropriation is included in every fiscal year budget that the president submits to Congress. I mean, it's something obviously that we want to see Congress continue to include in its appropriations bills when those are passed out of Congress. IHS receives the most recent advance appropriation it received was a two-year advance appropriation. So it will expire at the end of this fiscal year, and that's why we need to be sure that it's included in the next round of appropriations bills that are passed by Congress, and then every year thereafter to ensure that there's no gap, but that two-year advance appropriation is always applied on a continuing cycle until we achieve sort of the end goal of sort of a number of advocates in this space, which is mandatory funding for the Indian Health Service.
And what is the role of tribal communities in participating in the budget process?
Because the United States has a distinct relationship with tribal governments, the United States is required to get the feedback of tribal governments in the formulation of its budget. The IHS does that through a set process every year that that they call together tribal leaders every year to inform the formulation of the IHS budget. It begins at the IHS area level. So there are 12 areas across the country in which the IHS provides services. Each of those areas hosts a tribal local consultation on the budget, where tribal leaders come together with representatives from the IHS, as well as representatives from that area's urban Indian organizations, to give their feedback on their recommendations on what the IHS budget should be. Representatives of those 12 areas then come together for a national meeting in Washington, D.C. every year to give feedback as a national group to the IHS. The IHS then takes that feedback, uses it to formulate its budget, which it then forwards through the federal budget formulation process. The IHS is part of the Health and Human Services Department, which also hosts another tribal consultation at the HHS level to get tribal input into the entire HHS budget. So that would include not only the Indian Health Service, but other agencies which support the provision of healthcare services to American Indians and Alaska Natives, like the Health Resources and Services Administration, the Substance Abuse Mental Health Services Administration, SAMHSA, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, CMS, and other agencies throughout HHS. So it's a long-running process. We're in it right now in January of 2024. When we're talking right now, we're in the midst of the process with those national meetings coming up in February of this year.
Wonderful. And in terms of the general public and external partners or anyone who wants to get involved, what's the best way to continue to support these efforts?
Advance appropriations for the IHS remains one of, if not the top priority among organizations working in this space to improve healthcare services for American Indians and Alaska Natives. Until, like I said, we achieve our sort of end goal of mandatory appropriations for the IHS. So I think the biggest thing that they can continue to do is support advocacy efforts, both to the administration and the formulation of the president's budget, as well as on Capitol Hill throughout the congressional appropriations process, whether that's signing on to national sign-on letters that get circulated and submitted to congressional offices, whether it's uplifting the voices of Native-led organizations to make sure that they're the ones who are, you know, leading this effort, and those partner organizations are uplifting their voices, as well as, you know, raising this independently in moments where they can in conversations that they're having with the administration and offices on the Hill. But like I said, advance appropriations remains one of the biggest goals. Commensurate with that is also our effort to get a full level of funding for the Indian Health Service. And it's a longer conversation, probably for a separate podcast. I think it's important to note when talking about the appropriations process, that the IHS is woefully underfunded. The most recent estimates put the level of need for the IHS at over $50 billion. We are nowhere close to that. We're under 20% of that in terms of how much money is actually appropriated for the IHS. So in addition to advanced appropriations, we desperately need more money so that the federal government can actually fulfill its trust responsibility of providing healthcare services to American Indians and Alaska Natives.
Okay. And our website also contains a number of materials that may be helpful for people who are looking for additional information. NCUIH.org. And you can find an advance appropriations section, which includes infographics, a timeline, and some additional information that may be relevant to connecting with policymakers on this issue. Is there anything else you'd like to add before we sign off today?
No, I will reiterate what I said before. Advance appropriations has changed the game for every part of that ITU, that Indian healthcare system that we've been talking about. It is hard to put into words how much of a difference it makes for those providers on the ground to not have to worry about continuity of care for the patients that they're seeing, for knowing that they're not going to have to shut their doors if the federal government shuts down. We've seen it in the past that it is, when doors shut, it results in deaths in the community. And when you have an obligation to provide healthcare services to American Indians and Alaska Natives, that shouldn't happen. It's a non-negotiable obligation that the United States has. So anything that partners can do to support advanced appropriations for the IHS is critically needed, and eventually we'll get to our goal of mandatory appropriations over $50 billion for the IHS. Got a long way to go, but I know we will get there.
Absolutely. Well, it's been great to talk to you today, and thanks for sharing all that information. And please check out our website, NCUI.org, for anything else you may need. We'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode and want to help spread the word, please share it with others and post about it on your social media. The National Council of Urban Indian Health is a national nonprofit organization devoted to supporting and developing quality, accessible, and culturally competent healthcare and public health services for American Indians and Alaska Natives living in urban areas. NCUI is a national representative advocating for the 41 Title V Urban Indian Organizations under the Indian Health Service in the Indian Healthcare Improvement Act. Visit ncuih.org for more.